to order the regular meeting of the House Labor and Commerce Committee. Date is March 18th, 1986. Time is 1:25. Members present, Representative Navarro, Representative Davis, Representative Hanley, and Representative Pierce. We have two items up on the agenda today. First one that we'll deal with is House Bill 640, an act relating to the State Physical Therapy Board providing for an effective date. The first witness we'll have is Kenny Strickler from Occupational Life.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Kenny Strickler from Occupational Licensing, and my director, Nancy Dunn, apologizes that she couldn't be here today. She's over at a hearing on the Senate side. Basically, the department supports continuation of the Physical Therapy Board and of the committee substitute for House Bill 640. Our concerns were addressed in the House Task Committee, and we'd just like to say that we support passage of this bill.
Thank you very much. Also, I'd like to welcome all our close-up students who are here observing. Glad to have you. The next witness will be Carla Goranson.
My name is Carla Goranson, and I'm a physical therapist in Juneau, and I'm representing the Alaska chapter of the American Physical Therapy Association. And I'm speaking in favor of House Bill 640, primarily in relation to practice without referral, which is part of the bill, which we think is an important issue and I'm in favor of. And I'm here to answer any questions.
As a person who's gone through extensive physical therapy, that habit of being injured throughout my life, I can't support it as well. We also have the committee substitute, which is the one that I'd like to have before the committee, is the test committee substitute. And there's only one change that has been proposed, and that is changing the sunset date on page 1, line 11, from 1990 to 1989, which would be the first year of the session again, in case there are some problems that arise that need to be handled during an interim period and then addressed again by the same legislature that considers the sunset. So there are no objections, I would move for it. Also then, I'd like to have a motion to adopt it as a committee substitute.
So
moved. And without objection.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to ask of the physical therapist here who's testified, could you give us an example, though, of the type of person who could take advantage of your services without being referred by a physician or an orthopedic surgeon or a person who would usually be referring patients to you?
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, it could be anyone, really, any condition. Oftentimes, it's the person that has been seen by a physical therapist before, perhaps with the same condition, which they a chronic nature of a problem. And so they know that physical therapy was the way to go last time, and they want to start again promptly without having to make an appointment with a physician and and go through that procedure. So sometimes it's a, even a patient that that particular physical therapist has seen before, or they've had the ominous some kind of problem in the past. That's a very common situation, which right now you have to then look back to the physician. That would be one example. But of course it could be, you know, any type of person abuse in other situations as well. And just to follow up on that a little bit, would you be apt to see then a person who might have been in an automobile accident, perhaps be complaining of whiplash? Would that person be inclined to go to you first before seeing the doctor or the physician, or would that be a case where you would probably get the referral from the physician? I think if it was a person I had never seen before, that I would probably encourage them to get continued follow-up with the physician locally as well. But in that situation, there are some people that really have adversity to physicians for one reason or another, well, of course, the therapist too, but in that situation, I think that it would be good to get the physician follow-up and work, and, you know, continue to work as a team, which we do now. But in this case, with this bill, then we could begin therapy while they are in the process of maybe finding a local physician if they don't already have one, or waiting to get in to see a physician, which can be a long-term proposition for certain specialists.
I can vouch for that because I had my shoulder, my shoulder dislocated several times, and I've been looking it out a few times up in Kenai, but when I got down here, it took me a month to get an appointment to see a doctor to get a referral to go have physical therapy.
I appreciate that, and I did have someone talk to me during the weekend, so I barely well understood the question, but just thinking now in terms of the insurance problems we're facing too, I guess that perhaps you folks probably need to be sensitive to the fact that as perhaps the first person that a patient sees, you might have to do some screening on your own, I would think, if you're looking at an acute problem rather than a chronic problem, so that you wouldn't find yourself in the same situation that many of our doctors do and surgeons with now practice kind of simple.
That's right.
I also spoke to some other physical therapists about this, and what they have said that in a lot of cases, if they haven't seen a patient before, if it's not something that they are completely familiar with, they wouldn't want to see them without a referral anyhow because of that exposure.
Yeah. Anything else?
Any other questions? Comments?
CS for House Bill 640 has Labor and Commerce Committee with
We adopted Labor and Commerce.
Okay, we put a Labor and Commerce Committee first.
Okay, without objection. So moved. Thank you. Next item we have on our agenda is House Bill 556, an act relating to reporting sales and shipment of alcoholic beverages, providing for an effective date.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, here I have it, Donna. We have a crack sponsor, Rip Van John Ringstaff. And we'll have to wait until then, until we get the telecover set up. Oh, is that? I only have one staff today. We'd like to welcome Mr. Schrock to the committee meeting, and we have before us House Bill 556, an act relating to reporting sales and shipping of alcoholic beverages and providing for effective date, and we'll begin testimony by the crack sponsor, Rip Van John Ringstaff.
I'm John Ringstaff, the representative of District 20 in Fairbanks. HB 556, I introduced working on a scenario that there's a possibility or the possibility of abuse or a lack of ability for us to verify some of our reporting on our alcohol taxes and trying to plug a potential loophole. I don't know how much of a problem there is or if there is a problem, but it's a chance to possibly plug that loophole. I guess the scenario is that you can ship in $100,000 worth of booze and essentially say, well, here's taxes on $10,000 worth, and nobody can verify the differences. So hopefully, the idea there was to hopefully we get a check and a balance so we can and verify that and make sure we're getting the accurate amount. There are a couple other issues, and I think other people here testify on that, giving other issues in the bill dealing with how many types of distributors you're going to have and how are we doing that, what system we're distributing that alcohol under. I've got more homework to do on this and more research myself and getting myself better educated and up to speed on this. Hopefully what I would request is that we go through, have the hearing, get testimony on this, and then hold on to it, give me some time to get myself some, more up to speed and understand a little better and continue working on it. With that, I'll answer any questions.
Thank you, Representative Ringstaff. Are there any questions? If not,
thank you, and we'll listen to the other testimony.
It's my intention for committee members to hold the bill over. However, we will take testimony since there are some people in town. This time I'd like to take as the next witness, Grace Pleasance.
I'm the president of a company called GL International Trading, a wholesale distributor here in Alaska. We also are an importer of beer, wine, and spirits. About 6 months ago, my company has been dealing in an area that is known to distributors as parallel importation of product. And the language that is in the House Bill 556 deals with primary source of supply is language that I do not feel very comfortable with, because basically it is stating that my company, which I buy product on the parallel importation market, which means I buy product from a broker or another source in Europe of product, and I can bring it into the Alaskan market for considerably less cost to the Alaskan consumer by the retailer, on-premise or off-premise, we have a situation where that language would prohibit me from purchasing product in that manner. And I explained in my my testimony here that, you know, we are an Alaskan-owned company. We started about 3.5, almost 4 years ago. We've been importing beer, wine, and spirits since that time, except for, you know, about 6 months ago, as I said, we started importing on a parallel basis. We, to give you an example, in this we talked about the different systems that deal in our business, in the wholesale liquor business. Alaska is one of 9 states in the country that does not have a primary source of primary law on its books, or is a control state. And being one of 9 states, we're in a unique position because we can, as a wholesaler, shop around if you want and look for the best price of a given product. And I brought an example, for instance, today to show. This is Johnnie Walker Red, 750 ml, that my company imports direct from Europe. And this is a product that I brought in over the holiday season. And this product is 86 proof, the same as I understand it, it's 86 proof in alcohol. And it complies with all federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms regulations and importation. And we have, you will read in the testimony, been sued by companies such as Johnnie Walker. Johnnie Walker sued my company and we're in federal court on trademark infringement. And in order for Johnnie Walker to prove that there is trademark infringement, they must prove there is customer confusion or consumer confusion. I have with me, I'll bring it to testimony for you, a brief that my attorneys wrote and submitted to the judge, federal court judge, in January when Johnnie Walker was requesting a preliminary injunction on my company from bringing in their product. And they were denied, and we won that first round in court. However, there's been, since then, I've been sued by other companies. And the area of trademark infringement is one that the courts are looking at, and they will be deciding. And I'm sure it won't be this, you know, it may be throughout the year we'll be looking at this issue. But a lot of it they're saying is consumer confusion. In my brief that we submitted to the court, you will notice that we have a lot of affidavits from our customers that purchased the product. And they've come out and said there is no customer confusion. We added this little, this was a product that was sold during the holidays, but we added this little holiday greetings tag that, you know, just basically said this product you're buying is directly purchased from Europe. The savings that the customers were seeing on their shelf were seen basically because of the type of importation we were able to bring this product in. To give you an idea of what parallel is versus the primary source is we go to Europe and purchase from a company that has purchased product from Johnnie Walker and Sons. And for instance, let's take Johnnie Walker and Sons to give you an example. Johnnie Walker and Sons is owned by a company called Distillers LC. I think that's the corporate company name. And they own a company in the U.S. called Somerset Distributors or Somerset Importers. The Somerset Importers decides who is going to be the regional distributor or the local distributor. And so you have a series of anywhere from 2 to possibly 3, let's say, links in the chain of where percentages are cut because of their services that they've offered. My company went directly to Europe and found one source of supply for Johnnie Walker, for Bailey's Irish Cream, for Tanqueray, for a number of products. And we bring that in directly from Europe. We pay federal taxes as well as state taxes. They comply with every regulation that the U.S. government and our local ABC board has with respect to the product. We found no consumer confusion. And the way this House bill is written right now, it would prohibit me from continuing purchasing product in this manner. And so we wrote this little testimony up, so if you have any questions, you need to ask me. And I've got a sample to show you, you know, what the product looks like. We've actually done blind tests, you know, to see if it is the actual product and elevation, and everything comes down to that it is the same product. And there's been no allegations on the manufacturers that this isn't a genuine product. Their beef, or, the question that's going to be decided in court is whether or not it is, whether we're infringing on their trademark. And as I said, it's an issue that is being discussed right now in many courts.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess that was my question, is what's in that bottle the same as what I would be buying had it not come from
exactly the same. No, this is a genuine Johnny Walker product, and with none of the products that we've brought in have we had any, there's been allegations that have said to us that this product is not the same. For instance, I was explaining on one of the products, Kahlua. We bring in a Kahlua product that is a 1 liter bottle that is produced in Denmark. And this Denmark Kahlua is, I can explain, Kahlua makes a syrup in Mexico that they ship to distillers throughout the world. And there's, a distiller in Holland, the person that we bought it from, and there's a distiller in Los Angeles who produces the Kahlua that everybody in the U.S. buys through their local exclusive distributor. And it is the same Kahlua. We've had it tested. Even with the Kahlua, we've gone through the VATF analysis, breaking it down per ingredient and method of production, and all of those statements have come out to be it is the same product. So I feel very confident saying, we are not importing counterfeits. We are not importing items that are different. The products we bring and import are products that are produced by the manufacturer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just curious. You stated that Alaska is one of 9 states. Then could I assume then that other distributors and all but these 9 states could not go to Europe?
That's correct.
And purchase this product that you have.
That's correct. However, in the state of Washington, which is a controlled liquor
state,
the state of Washington. It was very interesting because the state of Washington decided about, about 6 months ago when my company brought in our first shipment, to look and see if it was possible. And I understand that they wrote numerous letters to their local distributors, which in some cases are the three major distributors in the Alaska market, and requested that they maybe get the product down at a little lower cost because they felt that they were maybe paying a higher price, and they didn't really see the need for it. And they were wondering why this parallel importer or parallel supplier could come in with the same product at anywhere from 20 to some cases 60% price difference, and especially when the state, a Johnny Walker is a Johnny Walker. And they went back, and I think, as I understand it, I have this brief, and you will see the affidavit from the state of Washington, they did a lot of internal talking to see whether or not, they wanted to take the step to offer those savings to their public. They went ahead. The product has been on the Washington state shelves now since February 1. What's interesting is that they have not been sued. And I am the only one. My company in Anchorage, Alaska, a small wholesaler in Alaska, is being sued. And I have been sued by the big guys, if you want to call them. Johnny Walker is a company that owns of 20 major scotch brands in the world, owns the 8 top. And they are, we're talking about billions of dollars. We're dealing with Seagram's. Seagram's recently sued me on a number of about 10 of their products. Interestingly enough, parallel importation has been in California for about 7 years on the beer and wine market. And they've never sued once Safeway or any of the major companies in the retail area in California that buy parallel champagnes on the market. And yet they're suing me for the same thing that California distributors have been doing for years, for about 7 years right now. And we find it very strange that, I am the small, little distributor in this spoke that is being, getting all the attention. And the state of Washington, I think as you will read in this testimony, basically told any of the people that, or any of the companies that were interested in suing them, that if they decide to sue, they will pull their product off the shelf. And, you're talking about 360 shelves, 360 stores in the state of Washington. As I understand, they are the 5th largest buyer of alcoholic beverages in the country. And so the magnitude of hurting the state of Washington in a lawsuit is, you know, I think the retaliation, I think, speaks for itself. I mean, they're much bigger, and I think there would be a lot more, you know, something to gain and something to lose on that. Washington State has always been telling me they're waiting for their lawsuits to come, and nothing has appeared.
Are there any other questions? Thank you very much for your testimony. The next witness will be Bob Esterling.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm the general sales manager for Alaska Distributors, and we are one of the wholesalers in Alaska that is in favor of this particular piece of legislation. To kind of give you a background, a little bit of background, I think, primary source of supply legislation has been around since long before parallel marketing of goods, for the simple reason it was introduced around the time after Prohibition as an attempt made to track efficiently every ounce of beverage alcohol that goes in through the system from the distiller or manufacturer through to the retail level. And between the wholesaler and the primary source of supply, they're probably the two most interested parties in what happens with these goods as they go through, because they're the ones that are primarily involved in the building of brands and so forth. And so it's very definitely in their best interest to track these goods and to report any, you know, shipments that are made into a state or to a wholesaler. And that's what kind of what we're trying to do here. The non-authorized importer, if you want to call them that, from the major distilleries or breweries or whatever, oftentimes are not the same importer that different parallel marketers are buying those goods from. So they really don't have quite as much of a vested interest in what happens to those brands as the primary source. And as I mentioned, or as Grace mentioned, as a matter of fact, there have been only 9 states left that have not initiated this type of legislation. So all of the goods can be tracked for tax purposes. And that was the way it originally started. The definition on the bill pretty much defines what the true identifiable source is with regard to the primary source. And those who really have the primary incentive to comply with the state regulations regarding what is sold to wholesalers. One of the things that Grace mentioned, and this has been kind of an offshoot now of since parallel marketing has taken place, is what's happened with product integrity. And obviously there's millions spent to build specific brands, and that's generally done by the importer. In the case of Johnny Walker, that's done not by the Johnny Walker people, but by the Somerset portion of that company. And there is a trademark infringement suit pending right now, which I was at the hearing itself, and basically what Somerset's contention was that the label with the third little strip on there was confusing, and it was a different color, and initially it was duty-free, and that was not going to be resold because that was confusing because it was not duty-free goods, and then the strip was white, and then that was confusing because it detracted in the Somerset people's minds, detracted from the label and was confusing. And now there's a new strip coming out that I'm not sure if it's out on the market yet or not. It's supposedly will cause less confusion according to the people that are bringing it in. However, that's, you know, that will be something to address when it comes in. However, one of the things that also came up that Grace mentioned that I think bears repeating is with regard to the integrity of the product itself. The Kahlua that is coming in on the parallel goods now is from Denmark, and it's my understanding, and I didn't bring anything with me, but I can certainly get that at a later date, that there has been some of this product returned because it does not taste the same as the product from Mexico. Now, I'd be happy to try to verify that if this committee would like that. Yes, okay. I should have done that. Unfortunately, this came to me at a very short notice, and I did not do that, so I will. It is basically the same label. The only way the consumer will know there's any difference is by the importer on the bottom is not Maidstone, who has, by the way, imported Kahlua in the United States for many, many years and has spent really millions of dollars building that brand from an advertising standpoint. And the bottom of the label says imported by GNL Imports, and it also it indicates that it is brought in from Denmark. So whether it tastes the same or not, I guess we'll have to get some bona fide tasters, but I have heard that's a problem. The other problem we're having right now is with Bailey's, as I understand it. Neither one of these are my products that I represent, so I'm going by strictly what I'm told by people in the market. And that's that the Bailey's is now coming in from Romania and doesn't even contain an Irish spirit. So the Paddington people, who have historically advertised this product as strictly an Irish product, now are faced with something here where the product is coming in from Romania and it's not an Irish spirit. So I guess that's a very strong point with regard to product integrity. And I think one of the things that would concern people in this industry as well is if there ever is a problem with the product itself, if there's ever any kind of tainted product or becomes adulterated in some way, if there is accidentally something mixed in there that's not accurate, who is going to be responsible under parallel marketing for the recall of those goods if they're coming in from several different suppliers?
I have a question on that. But isn't that regulated even in Europe as far as if Bailey's, if someone's marketing Bailey's out of Denmark, don't they have to use whoever owns the Bailey's rights? Don't they have to use prescribed methods and spirits and things like that, or else, I mean, certainly there has to be some penalties if they don't.
I really don't know. I can tell you this, and I have not talked to the groups. I don't know what the guidelines are for making bills. It's not one of our products. I can tell you this. We recently had
How about Johnny Walker?
Johnny Walker is one of our products. We just started representing that about 3 or 4 months ago.
But what I mean is, if this is Johnny Walker's, which
yes.
Johnny Walker admits is Johnny
yes.
Walker, then the only problem is how it's being marketed.
That's correct. In the case of Johnny Walker, I know that to be a fact because I handle that product and I talk to those people. And they tell me that they're reasonably sure that this is the same Johnny Walker that you would buy something from. There's no guarantee of that, but they are reasonably certain that it is. Obviously, the Kahlua and the Bailey's is not because it's coming from a different country. There's no way to make those identical, I don't think. Now, I can get affidavits to that effect, I suppose, which probably would have made sense if I had time to prepare that.
Mr. Chairman, I would think that would become more of an international trademark question of some sort, where Bailey's or a Kahlua wouldn't allow someone to make another Bailey's or another Kahlua that didn't meet their recipe.
I don't know. I can get that information for you. I really don't know. I'm sorry, I don't. Talking about the different regulations in different countries, I can say this, however, we recently had a re-eating recall, which you all might be familiar with in this room. The reason for that recall was that the stuff is produced in Italy, and there were between 7 and 10 parts per million of ethylene glycol in the wine itself. Now, in Italy, that's not a problem. The machinery and the testing that's done over there doesn't require them to test for that low of parts per million. I don't think they test for 20 parts per million. But in this country, that's a very big problem. I mean, they don't allow one part per million. So when this was discovered here, there was a recall of Reuniti. Fortunately, Banffy supported us in that because we represent Reuniti. And I can tell you, we had sales and going in the back rooms all over the state, as did every other major Reuniti wholesaler in the United States, to make sure there was none of this product anywhere. So just because one country does have specific guidelines and regulations doesn't necessarily mean that they all do. And I don't know, again, I should find out about this international trademark thing. I don't know how that works exactly, except it is my understanding that there have been complaints about Kahlua coming back to stores because it was not the same that they were used to buying. I didn't want to mention that. We're talking about consumer protection, too. I think Grace brought that up. And at one time, it was more of a variance in terms of pricing between regular market goods and parallel goods. And then, of course, with the valuation of the dollar, that is all starting to change now. And it's my understanding from talking to some people that are in the market that have been offered goods, our price on Johnny Walker Red right now on promotion is only about $4 a case difference, which adds up to about 40 cents a bottle. So it's not a big discrepancy. The biggest discrepancy now, according to other figures, I think it's about 10%. And one of the problems in researching that is that practically all of the comparisons are always made on list price. many states, we have a list price on products, and then we promote money back to the retailer based on the quantity they buy or based on a promotion that's initiated by the supplier himself. So a lot of times we'll co-op monies, we kick in, you know, a few bucks a case, the supplier kicks in a few bucks a case, and we offer that to the retailer. So I think the, like I said, the best of my knowledge is only about the maximum, the 10% spread between what our price is and what the parallel importing goods are now. And a lot of that has to do with the devaluation of the dollar, too, and I'm the first one to acknowledge that. And as the dollar becomes less valuable, those fluctuations will change substantially. Yes, that pretty much covers everything. I could summarize, I guess, by saying the primary source legislation was originally, and as far as the workers are primarily, designed to make certain that all taxes on those goods are paid, and that there's a viable and reliable tracking system to account for all of the goods that are shipped into the system, and in this particular case, into the state of Alaska. And right now, there is no way to cross-check that, and through the primary source of supply seems to be the most viable way, since that's the one that has been used in other states, and obviously the primary source supplier has a vested interest in what happens to his goods in that state. The spinoff, of course, has been this product integrity thing, which we feel is a major factor. Obviously, if marketing companies like Maidstone and Somerset and so forth are trying, and in Paddington with Bailey, are trying to sell a specific brand, a product, and advertise it that way as Irish goods and Mexican goods and so forth, that we're not sure that the integrity of that product exists the same when it's brought in from Denmark or Romania or something like that. So,
but what you're saying is that all of these different countries are authorized by Bailey's to make this product, that there might be some discrepancies between the individual countries, so that if you're bringing it in from maybe the prime supplier, if you bring it in from them, then that has its own special flavor or something, and it might not agree with these other countries who are marketing according to the standards that Bailey's has prescribed. There might be a little difference.
I'm told that there is. Now, we've had people bring back, as I understand it, and I can document this, I'm sure, but I've been told that people have brought back the Kahlua, for example, that comes from Denmark, but that it doesn't taste the same. So,
but what's the difference if Bailey's has a distiller in Denmark and one in Ireland?
No, I understand exactly what you're saying.
And they just all distributed to the United States through one distributor.
What
had difference there?
Well, the only difference I know with Bailey's, for example, would be if Bailey's and the marketing dollars spent here are spent on behalf of Paddington, and they advertise that as an Irish liqueur, okay, Irish cream. And Bailey's Irish cream that Paddington buys and brings into this country that they advertise is an Irish cream. And I don't know that necessarily is valid advertising or valid marketing if they're bringing in Bailey's from Romania and it does not have Irish whiskey in it or Irish spirits in it. Now, with the taste, even if the taste was identical, I don't know if there would be a problem with that or not.
If it's Bailey's from Romania or wherever and it doesn't have the Irish cream, then I'd say it's not Bailey's. I mean, I just can't imagine that, them letting you integrity of the product on a worldwide market.
Those goods were not intended to come to the United States originally when they were made in Romania by the Bailey's people. At least that's my understanding. Like I said, I don't deal with Bailey's, so this is conjecture and it's educated guess on my part. I do know that Paddington has been authorized by the parent company to bring Bailey's into the United States and it's been brought in as an Irish liqueur now, or Irish cream, and we're calling liqueur, but the soup is in it. But I don't think that the Bailey's that was made in Romania, or that is made in Romania, was originally intended to get in this market. It got here because of a importer, exporter in London who was buying it up somewhere on the European market and then bringing it through channels other than those channels that were originally set up by the Bailey's people, which is Paddington. So that those goods are ending up here when they really weren't intended for this market.
That's
here.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To get away from the dailies and Kahlua, I just amended back to what I assume that the Lions Chair what there's been going on. We don't have a question of what country they're made in and how they're advertising it. And you said, I think, that since you're handling Johnny Walker, that it's all the same. Correct?
I said, I told you the problem is, yes.
Told by him, by Johnny Walker?
Yes.
Okay. So it's the same product. And
he presented it or
so there's no question of quality there?
No.
Okay, then what is the question on something like the Johnny Walker?
Right now, the situation that exists with the lawsuit is a trademark infringement in that little white strip on the bottom. And the contention by the Somerset people is that's confusing. That that's not the way Johnny Walker has ever been presented before, and
okay, who are the Somerset people?
They're the people that have the marketing rights for Johnny Walker in the United States.
Okay, and what does the bottle of Johnny Walker that came from them have on it? Because it has to have the imported on it, correct?
Well, the importer is Somerset Importers, and that's integrated into the actual label itself. Now, that particular one does not, because it did not come from them. I can buy
so
it.
So the label's a little bit different?
The label's a little bit different. It doesn't have
any. Are you maintaining that people need the labels in the liquor store?
Well, I would hope they do. I don't know how extensive it is. That's why it's in court right now, I guess. I don't know whether that really is a detraction or not. It is to me, certainly, because I look at it from my side.
Is your company a party to the case?
No.
But you think that this would confuse the consumer?
I think it could.
What it was.
I think it could. And also, you've got contents of 75 centiliters, which is nobody uses that here. It's always 750 milliliters. That's all of the... I can't really see the label. I'll be happy to look at it and tell you if there's any other differences I noticed, but we don't use 75 centiliters here. Down on the bottom, I don't know if it talks about the quantity or the proof in there or not. I think the proof is on the little white strip. I don't know if there's another...
that's probably what people buy liquor for. They may look on the label for proof. That I might agree with.
If
but I don't know if there's
another... With some of the imported goods that were brought in and put through parallel marketing or gray market, is whatever you'd like to call it, the percentage of alcohol was listed in a percent rather than a proof, which is not, that's not the way spirits are sold in this country either. They're sold by proof, not by 20%. So I don't know if that shows up on that one or not.
Do all of
the proof has to show up to be legal, so they had to put that in, that's what they need, but then the sticker, and that's what's used for the imported by GNL importers.
So you're saying that most of the original, who puts labels on this? Is the person who actually makes it, or does the wholesaler put a label on it?
I don't know. I would imagine the wholesaler does. I don't know that. Okay.
Representative
Hamlet? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have all kinds of questions here, but my first question, I'm just curious. I wonder if there are any federal investigations that would seem to me. Are you aware of any federal investigations that are being carried on right now by alcohol and tobacco tax that would probably be looking at the parallel suppliers? I mean, would there be, I think you indicated, and Representative Winston indicated this was to close a loophole, and maybe the reporting through the Somerset people and those major importers, I'm sure there's a procedure for reporting and so forth that's pretty well established. I would gather that maybe that's not true with the parallel, the people who are going to Europe themselves, and I just wondered, are you aware, are we looking at any federal violations in the taxes on their investigations? Has this, I could see where there might be the person who is going to the source might not be reporting or might not even have the knowledge about what they're supposed to report the way the Somerset importer or the big importers would. And I just wonder if there are investigations going on or if the taxes are being paid. Do we have a federal violation as far as federal taxes?
I don't believe so. No, I think all the federal taxes are paid on these. And I don't, there's no federal investigation that I'm aware of, Representative Hanley. I know the only concern we had was strictly a state concern. And that is that right now, the way the reporting system is done, the wholesaler turns in to the state on the 10th of the following month, the quantity of goods they sold by spirits, by wine, and by beer. And they were taxed accordingly, yes, and they were taxed accordingly based on what we present to the state. You have to assume, I think, that most people are honest and they are reporting this. But if we brought in a container of goods and did not want to pay the state tax on it, if we did not report that we sold those goods, there would be no way for the state right now to check on us to tell whether we really did or didn't. And we certainly are not going to jeopardize our license over something like that. However, the possibility exists, and I think that was one of the reasons that this concern came up. And this concern is not just in Alaska, this came up since Prohibition. And that was one of the problems, was how do you track these goods? And what method does the government have of tracking beverage alcohol products? Because that was a problem before Prohibition, and fortunately none of us here remember those days, but all the problems that ensued, I guess it's my understanding that was a problem. You know, goods were being sold, bootlegged, if you will, without the tax being paid.
That's continued to be a problem even beyond that time since, with the stills in the South and even big business. I mean, it's big business. If you can sell this without paying the taxes on it, you've really got yourself pretty going.
That's absolutely correct. Because the majority of the price of that, or a majority of it, is taxed.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's not a federal problem, I don't believe, at this particular point. I think they've got that pretty well covered with customs and everything else. But the state right now does not have any kind of project at all.
So you want us to check on you a little more closely?
I'd like you to check on all of us a little more closely.
Okay, are there any other questions? No. Thank you very much.
We also have online.
Other than wholesalers might be able to ship alcohol
Okay, thank you, Mr. Schwab.
Thank you very much for your time, Chair.
And we will be in contact with you as we try to look out whether or not this actually has the impact that I guess we were originally hoping for.
Thank you very much.
With that, is there anyone else who wants to testify? If not, this bill will be held over until Representative Lindstedt notifies me that he has it in the form which is ready to move. And unless there are any objections, the meeting is adjourned.